Rework is brought to you by Basecamp. Have you ever had a group working on something where some people were using text messages, some were sending out email after email, and some were even dropping sticky notes on your desk with tasks on them? It's a mess and easy to get lost. Basecamp puts all your internal communication in one place so nothing gets lost and you can hold everyone accountable. It's easy to learn, your team will figure it out and start using it the very same day you show it to them. Go to basecamp.com to set up a free 30-day trial.
This story starts with a tweet. Actually, it starts with a couple of rugs.
My name is Irene Carmon. I am a senior correspondent at New York Magazine. My grandfather's from Morocco, and I was actually on assignment writing about where he's from and purchased a couple rugs at the Marrakesh market. One is a deep red, and it has traditional Berber drawings and markers on it. It actually has a tea kettle drawn on it. And the other one is more of a light pink, a little bit of a thinner pile, kind of a Mondrian style is how my husband, who's an artist, likes to describe it. Love these rugs, but they're very deep pile and we have a dog. So they really do need to be professionally cleaned.
Irene found a recommendation on a neighborhood Facebook group for a business called JL Carpet and Upholstery. And the guy who showed up to pick up her Moroccan rugs turned out to be the company's owner.
He immediately knew exactly what kind of rugs they were. And he actually told us that in between cleanings, we could put the rugs in a large dryer and just kind of like let them shake out. You know, business people aren't usually telling you how to use less of their services.
But that wasn't the only thing that stood out to Irene. As soon as he left her place, she tweeted, "Just here to share that the representative from the rug cleaning service had rug life tattooed across his knuckles."
You know, it reminded me of the old quirkiness of Twitter to just be able to say, hey, I saw this cool thing. This guy is really dedicated to his craft. I just looked and I think that there were like 4,888 likes. And the other thing that was cool is that a lot of people actually knew exactly who I was talking about, like Harry Siegel, who's a columnist at the Daily News. Another person who I don't know responded and said, I've used that guy, the rugs that I picked up in Afghanistan. He immediately knew what part of Afghanistan they were from. So it was cool also to feel like, as I replied to Harry, New York can still be good.
I was one of the people who replied to her tweet, and I got a response back from the rug life guy himself.
My name is Jared Lustgarten, and I own JL Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning, as well as New York Rug Life.
Hello and welcome to Rework, a show about the better way to work and run your business. I'm Waylon Wong.
And I'm Sean Hildner. Today on the show, the story of Jared Lustgarten and how he left a Wall Street career to open a rug cleaning business that's now a decade old and profitable.
He talks about his approach to customer service, the one kind of stain that even he can't remove, and how he's turning Rug Life into its own brand.
I started the business about maybe 10 years ago. I had been working in finance. The last job that I have, I was a prop trader, and I was trading like some gold options, and it didn't end well, and I got, you know, blown out. And, you know, I looked on Craigslist. I was like, I need to just like turn my brain off for about 6 months or whatever. So I looked on Craigslist and I saw an ad for like carpet cleaners. It said carpet cleaners, $1,000 a week, no experience necessary, etc. I answered the ad. I went out and I met with the guy. You know, it wasn't $1,000 a week. It was like some like a regular carpet cleaning company out of Long Island. They were like super cheap. They were like doing very basic and vanilla work. And they had like one type of shampoo that they used. You know, their clientele were people who weren't looking for miracles. Like, it was very inexpensive, like two rooms, a hall and a stair for like $60 or something. And I got like $12 out of that. It wasn't a good fit for me as far as working for this guy. But I thoroughly, like, I loved cleaning the carpet and like the emotional intimacy of going into people's homes every day and that kind of stuff. So I felt like I was like, you know, like contributing to society or something. I was showing up in people's homes. They had a need. I was meeting the need, and they were mad when I got there and glad when I left. the instant gratification is what really attracted me to the business. You know, aside from like being on my own in my own vehicle and nobody, you know, around me and that kind of stuff. So, you know, in the beginning, that was like the seed that was planted. Within a couple of months, I basically turned in my equipment. I borrowed like $600 from my dad to buy a used machine because I was like very close to like moving back home. At the time, I was a single father. I had an 8-year-old kid with me, my son. I was like, we have to put our balls on the table. So I borrowed the money from my dad. I got a machine. My best friend at the time was a tattooer. He made some pink flyers for me, and I spent all the money I had on 1 gallon of soap and like a button-down shirt with my name stitched in it. And, you know, I went out and started handing out flyers. I would stand on street corners in the middle of Park Slope, Brooklyn, and just hand out flyers. Or my son would help me after school or on evenings. We'd run up and down the avenues and put them in people's doors. I would go to like pet stores because I knew that, you know, dogs pee on carpet. So I'd go and I'd put like little coupons there, or I would speak to everybody that I could. Every time I saw a dog or a cat, I would pet it, let them know who I was. And I'm trying to think back now to try and remember how it was, because like, you know, many years into the game, like you almost forget what it was like to have nothing.
Do you remember your first customer or what it was like to get those first couple of phone calls?
Oh my God, let me tell you, this was like so long ago that like I didn't have a BlackBerry or anything. I had a regular flip phone. I remember like, you know, you're driving around and the phone rings and I would just light up like, oh my God, the phone's ringing. And then somebody would be on the other end, you know, and they'd tell me their tale of woe. I would be like nervous to give them the price. So I'd say like $75. And then I'd like wince and pray and they'd say, okay. And I'd be like, oh my God, they said yes. And then like... I would like show up and like, you know, basically kind of like put on a show. When I was working with the other company, what I found that really was going to put me a leg ahead of everybody else was, you know, in the service industry specifically, the customer service part of the service industry is very, very lacking. So I was showing up on time without smelling like cigarettes and had a uniform on. And that's how like my name really started spreading. What separates me from the other people is the experience that we provide. Even when people look up my reviews online, you know, it's 90% about their experience. We called, they answered, the quote was reasonable, the person showed up on time, there was no 4-hour window, they gave us an exact appointment, and my couch looks fantastic.
How did you figure out what to charge, especially at the beginning?
I was going on initially what the cheaper company that I used to work for, kind of what they were charging. And then I was in a client's home, and this was like in the way beginning. After I was finished, and she was so happy, there's a lady in Park Slope where my business really started taking off before I went citywide. Like, she looked at me and she was like, Jared, you need to charge more money than this. I couldn't believe she told me that, you know, because I was just like, hey, look, this is the price. You could pay more if you want, but this is the price. And then over time, as my business started expanding and I started getting more jobs and, you know, then I had to hire people and move on to the next level, then, you know, then the margins basically were dictating what the price should be. And I needed it to find a space where it would be fair for the customer and fair for us.
I mean, at the beginning, it was just you, right? So how many jobs could you handle in like a day?
In the beginning, I could maybe handle, you know, 3 jobs in one day. And even now, like, we still stick to that model. We're like, okay, we only do 3 stops in a day, no matter what. That way we don't have to compromise time for anybody's appointments and we don't have to rush back and forth. And in New York City, it's at least an hour drive in between each stop. We really don't want people waiting around for us. But in the beginning, if they called me at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I would run there at 7 o'clock at night because, you know, I had a kid to feed and I had to keep the lights on and that kind of stuff.
Did you have to do a lot of on-the-job learning, even kind of in the early days? Like, did you encounter certain kinds of jobs or situations that you hadn't seen before working for the other guy?
Yeah, like, I had a friend of mine that he had a laundromat, and he, you know, gave me a couple of tips because he, you know, he bought the laundromat from carpet cleaning money from a business that he had, you know, many years ago. So he was just like, listen, just use like these chemicals and it'll kind of keep you out of trouble. What the saying is, you know, it's all good until it's not.
Yeah.
So like everything was working until one day, like I was looking at this fabric. I didn't know what it was. And then cleaned it. And I turned the whole sage green couch. I turned the whole thing pink one day. I was like, oh my God. Like, I was like scared. The only thing I did was really go back to the customer. When they called me, I said, I'll do whatever it takes to make it right. And they were just like so appreciative. Like they didn't even, honestly, I was shocked, but they didn't even really care. They're like, just refund us for the cleaning. We don't really care that much about this couch. Our kids play on it and whatever. And, you know, good luck. And they, oddly enough, they still used me. That's when I started finding like these little chat rooms online for like cleaning dorks like me. Once I started cleaning on a regular basis, that's when I was like, okay, I need to really educate myself. And I started taking classes and that kind of stuff too.
After you started taking these classes and learning more about different kinds of fabrics and different kinds of chemicals to clean them, did you ever figure out what happened with that green couch that turned pink?
Yes. It's funny because like I've fixed that type of problem for other cleaners since then. You know, not to get super duper technical.
Oh, you can get super duper. I'm curious
okay.
now.
All right, great. So here's what happens. Like many, many years ago, they made this law where they have to put a flame retardant inside of any cushion that has feathers. That way, if you fall asleep with the cigarette hits the cushion, then blah, blah, blah. Many times it's like a pinkish or red color and it's inside the cushion. Over time, it will wick all the way to the top where the fabric is, especially after it gets wet. So since I was using a machine that uses water, what it did is it activated those dyes that are in the flame retardant and they wicked all the way to the surface of the fabric. So I thought I was just using the wrong chemistry when in reality that sometimes that stuff happens on its own. I've gone into people's homes and I can identify it right away now. But I spent like months and tens of thousands of dollars educating myself with like industry leaders who really, oddly enough, because like they used to see me online, they almost, I wouldn't say took pity on me, but they were like, there's this little guy in Brooklyn operating by himself and like we need to help him. They're the best, and I would not be anywhere without them.
I mean, it sounds like your job involves a fair amount of detective work, right? Because I'm just thinking about the carpets and the rugs and the upholstery I have in my house. And if you ask me, what is this? I mean, I don't know, you know? So it's like you have to be able to just know what you're dealing with each time you walk into a home, right?
Absolutely, yes. There's so many variables involved. The main variable, oddly enough, is the customer, because the customer will tell you, you know, I didn't touch this, because we'll say, okay, typically what happened? Like your dog peed on the rug, and they'll say, no, I left it alone. But like normally the original sin is okay, but once people go in a panic, they go underneath the sink and they get the Resolve, the OxyClean, the this, the that. They make a big sandwich, and then that's typically where the problems lie. But like an effective, educated cleaner will normally not have any problems. But at the end of the day, sometimes we win, sometimes the fabric wins.
After the break, Jared shares the absolute worst thing to spill on your carpet. But first, why don't we have Lexi from the Basecamp support team talk a little bit about the kinds of companies using Basecamp.
We have a huge variety of different customers and kinds of companies or endeavors that use Basecamp. And that's like one of my favorite things about the job is to see how different people use it and what they use it for. Everything from like a Major League Baseball team, lots of like architecture firms and artists and people who have their own small businesses like that. Lots of schools and churches, event planners, especially wedding planners. And I've seen a lot of couples just using it themselves to plan their own weddings. Lots of snack companies, and in particular, a lot of coffee companies, which I feel like really resonates with us here at Basecamp. And I like the idea of like a lot of really over-caffeinated people using Basecamp to streamline their thought process and work, because I relate to that a lot.
No matter what you do, Basecamp can help you do it. Learn more and try it for yourself at Basecamp.com.
What are the most difficult kinds of stains to get out? Like, what are the situations you walk into and you assess and you say to the customer, I just have to be honest, science can only do so much for this issue?
Okay. Keeping it all the way 100, like the worst thing is those little ices that the kids get in the summertime that are like neon green and blue and red, like those 50-cent ices. Like,
yeah,
it's over.
Really?
I promise you. I don't know. First of all, whatever chemical that is that they're making money off of selling them for 50 cents, I don't even know. And the fact that people are eating it is like even crazier. Not that I'm judging. I mean, because I do that stuff too. But when that gets on a rug or on a couch, it's over. Because think about it this way. There are dyes that are in the food. There's either natural dyes like grapes with wine. Mm-hmm. And then there's like synthetic dyes like Snapple Apple has like red dye number 5, whatever that number is. Yeah, because apple juice is not really red. So when you spill something on your couch or on the rug, you're literally dyeing the rug. If we can't get a stain out of the rug, we can always do a color correction where we can blend the stain in and that kind of thing. With like a couch, the fabric is very, very thin and it's over.
That's interesting. The service you offer of being able to color correct, let's say a rug, that sounds like something that you would have added kind of later on as you got more specialized.
Absolutely. So what happened was my mentor, Lisa Wagner, the lady who took pity on me, planted the seed of, if you just specialize in one or two niches and become an expert, you can charge a premium. So as we started getting into really the thick of the rug game, you know, we were like, okay, well, how are these rugs made? Well, they're made with dyes. So if we can't get this dye out, can we do a color correction? We try and stay in our lane, but it was like years into our business that we discovered another way that we can fix problems that other people can't fix.
When did you get to the point where you started to feel like, you know, I think this is a business that is going to be sustainable and, you know, you weren't worried that it was all going to go away overnight?
Here's what happened also. In the very beginning, I said to myself, I'm going to go to community college like at night. I went for like an LPN, which is like a lower level nurse. But within 6 months, I was going so hard at getting jobs that I dropped out of that school and that was it. Because I knew, you know, this has to be everything. You should never start a business unless you absolutely have to. Like, because that's what it's going to take. If I didn't close jobs or if I didn't get customers, the lights were going to get turned off. And there were times when we were swapping like the Con Ed bill and the cable bill, and then the cable went away. Like, you know, I was blessed with like the gift of desperation.
Did your business grow, especially at the beginning, via word of mouth? You mentioned you were working a lot in Park Slope. Was it families referring you to other families?
In New York, and I'm sure now everywhere else throughout the country, they're like online communities of parents. A big one in New York is called Park Slope Parents. There's like thousands of members and whatever. So like one mom would be like, listen, this guy just came and he took our rugs and he cleaned them and brought them back when he said he was supposed to. And everything looks great and it doesn't smell like pee. And then it would explode like exponentially that way. I'd go into somebody's home and it'd be a kid's mom and there's like Play-Doh everywhere, you know, that kind of thing. So like, that's who I really focused on because I knew that they would spread the word.
Are they a fairly demanding profile of client as well?
They're people that they're in the fight, just like you. My husband is working full time. I'm working full time. They're going nuts and they have these kids and we all have these little apartments. They don't want bullshit. What really started separating us from other people, like initially, was that like, yes, we do give exact time appointments. From the time I started my business till now, most companies, whether it's a plumber, electrician, the cable guy, they'll say, listen, we'll be there between 10 and 1 or 10 and 2. Like I would pay him an extra 100 to come at 10 on the dot so I can get along with my day. There's also like a lot of bait and switch in our business. They'll say, okay, we'll come clean your couch for $99. And they get there and then they put on a show and it's like, now it's going to be 300 and you have half a wet couch. When I say, okay, this is the price. They're so happy that like, this is the price. Now we clean probably 100 couches a month without blinking and maybe that amount of rugs as well, maybe 100, 150 rugs a month. It's a mathematical equation that we're going to have to go and touch something up. When people called and they say, Jared, this cushion, it dried a little funny. Like, I don't know. We were like, okay, no problem. It's like they're calling, waiting for the fight. And we don't put up the fight. We just say, okay, well, we'll be there tomorrow. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, we'll be there tomorrow. Don't worry. There's obviously no charge. You know, sometimes these things just need an extra shot. And when our reputation started moving that's how we did business, honestly, that's when like the business itself was born.
When did you get your tattoo?
Well, the Rug Life tattoo I got a year and a half ago. I wanted it for like a while. And I was saying to myself, like, you know, once you do this, it's over. Like, it's over. I mean, I have another small tattoo on my neck behind my ear.
Uh-huh.
It's a New York Yankee tattoo. That was like very symbolic too, because I got that like maybe a year and a half into my business when like my Series 7 was expiring from working on Wall Street. I said, once this expires, I'm going to put this tattoo on my neck. That means I could never go back. I could never put a suit on again and have these people at JP Morgan or wherever tell me what to do. I'm going to be free. So like a year and a half ago, I was looking at my hands and I was dreaming about it, Rug Life. I was so happy I did it. Let me tell you, I closed more deals with that tattoo than anything else that I've done. Now, when I pick up rugs, can people see that? They're like, oh my God, we have the right guy.
And then what is going to be the specialty of Rug Life, the kind of business within a business that you started?
Everybody, they typically say the same thing, like, all right, it's $200 to clean the couch, but I have this mattress, I have this rug. You start tallying everything up and like, okay, this is going to be $1,300. And they're like, oh my God, it's a lot of money. And we understand. We're going to go and we're going to sell these packages. So we'll come into the home and we'll clean $1,000 or more worth of stuff, but we allow the customer to pay over time. You can make like 3 payments. That really helps out like a lot of people, because to have everything done at once is really, it's a lot of money to absorb at one time, especially here in New York. And typically we find a lot of our customers are expecting mothers or people who are selling their apartments and they need everything done and they need it to look good. Our Rug Life brand is specifically only going to sell those packages. And then my JL carpet brand is still, you can buy things a la carte. The times that I've explained it to people, like, oh my God, that's a fantastic idea. But what if they cancel their credit card after the second payment or whatever? And this is really where we do it on the honor system. I'm willing to take the risk because, you know, because I believe in humanity. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a percentage of people that may take advantage of that and jerk us around, and that's fine. You know, but there's so many more people that we're going to be able to help that say, okay, we'll come and we'll clean your sectional, every mattress that you have because the baby's coming. And then the dog peed over here and like, we'll do it all and just don't worry about it.
When you think back to your life in finance, does it just feel like, I don't know, like a whole other life? Does it feel like a million years ago?
Absolutely. But, you know, I would never be where I'm at without that experience. I was like 17 or 18 years old. My first job, I was like a runner on the New York Mercantile Exchange. There were like thousands of people and you're just running around with tickets and all these other things. And I learned a lot about punctuality. The market opens at this time, so you have to be here. And my next step, I became like a retail stockbroker on the telephone. These guys, they were like, it was unbelievable. Relentless, relentless, relentless. The reason why we make all this money here is because we just stay on the phone. You know, so all of these things that the seeds they really planted, but the most important thing that stayed with me, working the numbers. So I knew when I was standing out on that corner with those pink flyers, whether it was 100 or 1,000, it didn't matter. The number was going to come when the phone was going to ring. And it's just, was I willing to die on that corner? Was I willing to walk through my own fear? What am I willing to do? What am I willing to sacrifice? Who do I want to be?
What do you think about when you're cleaning a rug? It seems like it's very solitary, kind of alone time, meditative work. What do you usually think about?
It's funny that you say that, because that's literally, it's like break time from reality. My shop is off the beaten path. You can drive past it 100 times. People won't see it. And then we have a huge wash pit in the basement that nobody, not that it's a secret, but like it's not open to the public. So I can go in there. I can be with myself, by myself. I listen to audiobooks, podcasts. You know, my hands do the magic and my brain is absorbing like information and that kind of stuff. Even if it's just music, it is super meditative. Even though like I do my own meditation, whatever, it's like very soothing. It's like, you know, I wash like 3 or 4 rugs and I come out of there and like magically the world gets their act together. Like nobody bothers me anymore. The lights are green and like I'm a lot less agitated, you know? what I really I'm happy about is the richness that I have like in my life. Like our business does very well. We're profitable and all these other things. And the best thing about owning a business is it allows you to say, okay, who do I want to be? Like I have this freedom now. So the best thing that I could do was provide a place for my kids to come and work so they could follow their dreams. There's no contract that I could sign with somebody for doing this amount of work or whatever that is worth my joy. You know, we're making enough money that all of our bills are paid. Can I provide good experience for my children and whatever? Yes. Can I relatively eat whatever I want in New York City whenever I want? Absolutely, yes. And that's a big thing for me because I'm a huge foodie. I can go to the gym whenever I want. It's like my time. Working a business is about buying back your own time and then providing opportunities and experiences for other people. So I think that's what makes me successful to me. And like, it's not about P&L. There's no number that I found that would be able to replace that freedom. And that's really that's what my life boils down to.
Rework is produced by Waylon Wong and me, Sean Hildner. Music for the show is by Clipart. Special thanks to Avinoam Hennig.
You can find Jared's business at jlcarpetandupholstery.com and newyorkruglife.com. We'll put a photo of his Rug Life knuckle tattoo on our website, rework.fm, where you'll also find show notes and episode transcripts. Erin Carmone is on Twitter at Erin, that's I-R-I-N. She is the co-author with Shauna Konishnik of the 2015 book Notorious RBG, The Life and Times of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Did you feel like a special kinship with Jared and his tattoo because both of you are known for kind of like plays on hip hop, pop culture?
You know, I never thought of that way. Anybody who knows me knows that I know nothing about pop culture. It's really my co-author, Shauna, who came up with the Notorious RPG and is much more tuned in than I am. But, it is a funny coincidence.